Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us for another great episode. Today, I have guest John Nord on the show, also known to you all as Nord the Barbarian and the Berserker. We talk about Mid-South, AWA, WWE, the Berserker gimmick, and much, much more, so stick around for that. Guys, I apologize for no Sunday show this week. I've got to catch up on my research for the AWA and Stampede shows. So there may not be a show every Sunday like I thought for the rest of the year, but there will be some Sunday episodes released in the future. But you always have the old good old Wednesday episodes coming out every week, and then there will be some bonus episodes. So just hang in there. There's some cool stuff. Got some stuff. It'll be out there. But until then, let's go ahead and just take a break and get right to it, all right? And when we come back, I will have my guest, John Nord, on the show. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF Project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the one and only John Nord, better known as Nord the Barbarian or the Berserker. John, how are you?
I'm doing good. I got a little knee infection here. They want to damn near take my leg off, and I've been fighting it for 9 months. So I'm in a big cast right now, sitting in a lazy boy chair. But had a lot of people call me and donate me a scooter and stuff. I got to give kudos to the Cauliflower Alley Club. They literally just bought me a brand new scooter. So,
well,
yeah, that's really nice. They're great people. And
yeah,
and don't forget about Yukon John. And
that's right.
All these other gimmicks.
That's right. Man, yeah, but we're going to talk about you've done quite a few.
Yeah, I did. They added up quick.
Yeah, I bet. Well, when you
just don't know, but yep.
Well, when you started, you were trained by Eddie Sharkey, and
not really.
No,
not really.
All right,
Brad Rankins.
Okay,
Trained. Although Eddie kind of got in on it because he wanted the do-re-mi, he just did. That's how Eddie gets. But it's just, well, I love Eddie. But really, it was by Brad. Eddie just kind of hung around.
Yeah. Well, what was it like training with Brad Rankins, right? Former Olympian, tough guy.
It was great, great. I talked to him every day, actually.
Yeah, still.
And Brad is a freak. I remember when I was in high school, I was watching the 76 Olympics.
Uh-huh.
And he says, who was one of the competitors, says, Dan Gable said Brad Rankins was the strongest wrestler he ever wrestled, you know.
Man.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
From Gable, you know.
Yep. Yeah. And,
yeah, Brad's a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy.
I'd love to talk to Brad sometime and everything else. But, you went to Mid-South and you became known as just the Barbarian. And you were managed by Skandar Akbar.
Yep.
What'd you think of Akbar?
Oh, I liked Akbar. He was a good guy. He's kind of a crabby old guy, but he was still a nice. He was still just good. He's just a good dude. But when I got to Mid South, Vern Gagne came to me one day. He was best friends with my father-in-law. So with Vern, I could do things like screw up and not get fired and all that. But he sent me, says, you're going down to Mid-South, Louisiana. And I said, well, what do you mean? I didn't even know what that meant. I didn't know there was like 9-12 territories or whatever. I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And, but I got there and Watts came up to me. And then Jake Roberts came up to me and he says, he looks like a barbarian. And Jake took me to a barber and had the barber shave my head in these streaks of hair on my head, you know. And it was great because I was really good friends with Jake. And that was damn for a whole year. It was me and Jake tagged up and then, We Jake's a lot of fun, and it was just, Mid-South was great, but you talk about the hardest territory, if you know a guy that you know what he's talking about, that he knows what he's talking about, the hardest territory without question was Mid-South.
Well,
yeah, I mean, you traveled 300 miles a day making $300 a day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They always said those drives were terrible.
It was unbelievable. And a lot of two laners.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people getting killed on them Louisiana bayou roads, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just how it was back then. But thankfully none of us guys got it, you know?
What, and how'd you get along with Bill Watts and working for him?
I like Bill. He kind of was a he back then, I mean, I know how it is. He kind of had a big ego, and he was a little bit, he was kind of a blowhard, actually.
Yeah.
But with saying that, it's taking nothing. It just, he kind of just, you know, he made it feel like pro wrestling was like amateur wrestling.
Mm, yeah.
No, it's not the same, you know, and that's how Bill was. But one thing I will say about Bill Watts, he was good. He was good for wrestling, and he knew it very well. He was a smart guy, and I would say the only thing about guys that you think were real smart and were real successful, half the time you got to call the shit the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
They hurt people. They stepped on a lot of people. They had big egos, so let's not forget that.
Yeah. You know?
Morally, they were a lot of the times just not that moral of people.
Yeah.
And that's what always freaked me out. And I'm not saying I wasn't, but it was just that, you know, just that stepping on people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For the almighty dollar, you know?
So. Yeah. Well, yeah, in 85, you won the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Rookie of the Year Award. And
yeah.
At that time, what was that like for you guys, you know, the magazines and winning an award like that and everything? I mean, I know, you know, it not putting any more dollars in your paycheck, but was it kind of a cool thing to have?
It was kind of cool. I got to say, it was kind of cool. And I tell you what, I would go down. There was a gas station called Speedy Market, you know, and I would go down there about 3 blocks from my house. I would check them magazines to see if I was on it.
Yeah.
And God, when I got Rookie of the Year, I was pretty proud of that. They gave me a plaque and all that. But I liked Bill Apter. He's such a nice guy and all that. And it was kind of ahead of my thinking. I kind of went, who cares, you
know? Yeah.
But that wasn't my ego. I just, you know, I'd say the biggest thing that was my fault was I think if I went a lot further. It's just I had a hard time because I knew I could always go sell cars at my dad's car lot and on and on. So, but did I have fun and meet a bunch of great guys? Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
It was a blast.
Yeah.
It was just, let's have fun. And, of course, you know the guys I grew up with. Kurt Hennig, Rick Rude, Mike Hegstrand, Tom Zink, Brady Boone. I mean, oh, these are all guys I knew since third grade.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that was cool because they were all just great, greatest guys you could ever know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then you ended up back in the AWA, and that's where you kind of became known more as Nord the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, and there you were managed by Sheik Adnan El Casey. It's you know, because of your character, I guess you always kind of had to have that manager, right? That guy talking for you, because you weren't really supposed to be the the speaker.
No, not really. It just I was just always felt wild, and I just always wanted to have a good time on top of being wild, you know.
Yeah.
But we had Wrestle Rock in '87, and I think it was '87, and we had this, they had made up songs even for each guys. And I remember the Sheik's, Sheik's a freak, and that's not funny. He's got his army and lots of money. You know? So, God, me and Henny would be just laughing so hard at these. And it was just fun.
Yeah, and when you were that early time in the AWA, you teamed some with Bruiser Brody, right?
Yeah, and actually me and Brody were main event against Greg Gagne and Snuka. And then I did the job, and then Vern got 5 minutes in the cage with the Sheik. So that was the, that was that program. And it, even being with Frank and getting to know him, Brody liked me just very simply because I really respected him. And I liked guys that were ex-athletes and all that. And but he just liked me because I respected him, and I was always not letting my ego get carried away or nothing. I tried to keep it in check always, and he liked that. But matter of fact, me and Frank sat there and had about a 12-pack each before we went out on the match. You know,
yeah.
That's no BS either. So,
yeah.
Why? I don't know. You should take a 12-pack of beer before you go out and wrestle in front of 20,000 people.
Yeah.
What is wrong with us?
Yeah.
Well, what was wrong with us was it was always a good time.
Yeah, yeah, and Frank Bruiser was a smart guy, right? I mean, he was a former former reporter. I mean, did some news work at the newspaper.
San Antonio.
Yeah.
Yep, San Antonio. Yeah, Frank was a really smart guy. He was really smart. The only time I got him a couple of times is, I just could drink a lot of beer he would go out with me a couple times, and I got him so sick. He couldn't call me for a week. He says, "Brother, I was so sick." Well, God, I don't miss those hangovers, but Frank was a smart guy. And a lot of guys said he was a bully. You know, a few guys said he was a bully. He wasn't. He just called shit. When guys were in the locker room acting like they're Hulk Hogan and they're really, they should be grateful they even got a job, Frank could kind of let them have it. Not always, but he wasn't a bully, but like I know a few guys said he was. So.
Yeah. Did he ever have any issue with you because you guys had kind of a similar look, a similar style? Did he ever?
No, I never had one issue once. Frank was, I remember Vern wanted me to be the barbarian and kind of do the Brody thing. And I'm waiting for Frank. I was with him in Japan when him and Snuka walked off the train in the famous tag team tournament.
Uh-huh.
They just went home instead of doing the job. So Frank, I went up to him at an ESPN taping. I was kind of nervous he might be a little mad about me doing his gimmick. But he said, "Hell no, brother. You are a good guy. And, you know, you're my friend. Hell, anybody want me to do it, I want it to be you. It's a compliment to me, you know," and all that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you worked in World Class, where you were there, you were managed some by Gary Hart. And it was different than Akbar or Al Casey. What was Gary Hart like to work with as a manager?
He was funny as hell. He had that talk kind of like almost like an accent.
Yeah.
And I don't know what accent it was, but it was some kind. And he was funny. And he didn't take it terribly serious either. But he was just, all I remember is Gary was a fun guy and never told me what to do. I never told him what to do. We just ad-libbed always. And, but I remember once we were doing interviews for the Von Erichs and Frank and Gary Hart was there and I says, "Hey, I'm doing the interview. I says, "I got a new name for Kevin and Mike Von Erich." And I said, "Their new names are Itsy and Bitsy," you know. And they came up and said, "Brother, you don't say that. Don't say that. These guys own this place." I said, "Oops."
Oh, so, man.
I remember that was kind of funny because I just, that's something I would do. I was just kind of like I wrestled Bill Watts once, and I'm doing that leg drop and putting my ass or damn near on his head. And he would roll out of the way every time, and he got him up to me and go, I'm not going to take that leg drop. He crushed my head. I said, oh, sorry. I just didn't know.
That had to be quite a sight laying there on the mat, seeing a big John Nord going up in the air to drop that big lick.
Yeah, I'm watched. Yeah, and Bill, of course, I thought him as old then, but he's young. Go figure, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But Bill treated me good. I had a problem because I just didn't want to stay in Louisiana. I had my high school sweetheart, a beautiful little wife at home. We had a house. And every night I'm driving 300 miles going, what the hell am I doing in Louisiana? It ended up learning where it really, you learn what pro wrestling is in Mid-South. The rest of the territories were easy compared to Mid-South, without question.
Yeah. Well, and then go ahead.
I was going to say, I met my best buddy there, Lynn Denton, the grappler, and he's a great dude and I'm just a great friend still. So I met him.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, later when you returned, you went back to the AWA later, late 80s.
Yep.
This is, you mentioned UConn John, and you were doing a lumberjack gimmick. Yep. You teamed with Scott Norton as the UConn Lumberjacks. Yep. So how did that come up for you to do the lumberjack thing and change your gimmick?
Well, the AWA, they were just in the same business. You go 87, 88, 89. I'm going into Portland on Saturday nights working but in the AWA, they were just going like, you look like a member, like, be UConn John, Greg would tell me. I go, okay, let's try UConn John. And I tried it, and something didn't feel right. I looked kind of, I wasn't even working out. I was going back to the car lot. But I was, nevertheless, and that kind of took its course real quick. Then we were the Lumberjacks, me and Scotty Norton, who I've known since I was a kid. Scotty, another guy.
Yeah.
And I love Scott Norton. And this is when he first broke in. And he still gets mad when I said, hey, Flapjack Norton.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, he said, shut up, I don't want to hear that shit. I said, hey, Flapjack, did you really eat 278 pancakes? Shut up. Shut the fuck up. And then you start chopping each other. And it's just, I kind of got him on that, And the interview just ended up crazy. And all Scotty could say in the interview was, I like them Flapjacks.
Yeah, I was going to say you were UConn John, but at least they didn't call you Flapjack.
Right.
Could have been worse, I guess.
Scotty just hates it, too.
Oh, I bet.
But what a guy. What a great guy. But I tell you what, I loved Vern Gagne. He has helped so many guys. He paid so many guys really well. Heenan and Mad Dog and Bockwinkle in those years, but those weren't my years. And by the time I got there in 84, the money was so bad that it was hard to get serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, probably, I would say most people maybe remember you from your run in the WWE as the Berserker. And yep. You went there in 91 and it had a good run. You were matched with Mr. Fuji. That gimmick, it really wasn't that whole lot different than Nord the Barbarian. It wasn't.
Not really. Yeah. No. And that's, Vince blew me in. And Actually, it started, I had a tryout for the movie Suburban Commando, I think it was. And me and The Undertaker, who I knew from Mid-South, actually, were sitting in the same lobby. We tried out for the part, you know, and we went in. There's the director's name was Burt Kennedy. He's a big-time director. He's a Hollywood guy. And I didn't even practice my lines or anything, but I, for being a heel, you got a 6'10" red-haired guy that looks sicker than hell, or you got a 6'5" guy that really probably ain't weird looking, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he did. It was no big deal. But that's how I started with Vince. Then Vince brought me back the next day and says, what do you, John, and Patterson was sitting there, Vince, and Patterson says, oh, John, we hear that if you, we tell you to take a right, you take a left. I said, yeah, I used to do that. I'm, those years are over now. I'm pretty wise. I was just saying it just to get a job. But anyways, he says, well, what do you feel like? I said, I don't know. I just feel wild, but I just want to. And then he goes, how about a Viking? And yeah, so I went into this costume room they had. And it was amazing. It was like a Hollywood costume room almost. And picked out that stuff. And I was a Viking for the first couple matches. But here, go figure, some guy in Japan, believe it or not, had the Viking name trademarked.
Oh, yeah.
So I would have been the Viking, definitely the Viking for a long time. And Vince said, well, there's a form of a Viking called the Berserker. Let's go with that. And I didn't really like that name, but I don't know. I guess I made enough money there for a couple, 3 years and all that. And but I got to say kudos to Undertaker, because when I tried to stab him with my sword, well, first of all, they were having a hard time with Undertaker. He wasn't having what you call good matches. Because of his gimmick, he moves so slow, you got to be somebody that's bouncing off him or something. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Because if you both move slow, it's the shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And so, and really in Japan, even Mark, I mean, no, I love Mark. We're friends. Really good friends, actually. And the Japanese just booed at him, you know, but they were not accepting of him. Later in his career, they accepted him because he was so over. But then I wrestled, and they brought me in. They said, hey, who can you have a good match with? And The Undertaker said, John Nord. And for that, him doing that, I'm eternally grateful for him, because I got to do wrestle him every night for months and months, and my pay tripled. So he did me a great favor, and I'll always love him for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I tried to stab him, a lot of guys tell me, God, I didn't think wrestling was real until I seen that sword stick in the ring.
Yeah.
Then I thought, God, it's got to be real.
Yeah. So if someone saw you out in public, do they typically remember you as Nord the Barbarian or as the Berserker?
Yeah, up in the Midwest, the Nord the Barbarian.
Yeah, okay.
Anywhere else, especially the East,
the
Berserker. But it depends if they watched ESPN and in what age they are. Most of the time, if they were 5 to 10 years old back 40 years ago, they were watching ESPN and Vince.
Yep, know? Yep.
And then as they got older, it was the Berserker. So, but, yeah, interesting how it evolves, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and you did go to WCW for a little bit, just wrestling under your name, John Nord. And you had blonde hair.
Yeah, yeah, what? Yeah, I went there. Well, I me and Barry Darso went up to the CNN tower and met with Eric Bischoff. And it took about 5 minutes. He said, okay, you're both signed for $150,000 each. We just went, yeah, baby. And we didn't care. We're going to use your real names and this and that. And here was the point. $150,000 was a lot of money. And I had a wife, 3 kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I never hardly, they never, you hardly ever wrestled there.
Yeah.
So it was like free money.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you probably wrestled maybe 34,000. The other 20 were free money, and you're everybody. Let me tell you, everybody. But then he got into the click, and Eric Bischoff is a little weasel, you know.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah.
And he got into this click, and he let these guys like get into his brain.
Yep.
Scott Hall, Nash. And they just, let me tell you, it was super successful, the NWO and all that. But boy, he got into them guys' heads, and they were, if you didn't want to keep your job, a lot of guys would be knocked out in the locker room. But we had to keep our jobs,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What am I do? Go home and say, yeah, I punched this guy out, and now I don't got a job on
it? Well, when you were there, did they never talk to you about maybe doing a gimmick, doing something a little more, doing something different?
Yes, here's what happened. I was all set up for a really good push, and that's no BS.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. In Springfield, Missouri, I wrestled Hugh Morris.
Uh-huh.
And I went down on my neck, and something twinged.
Oh.
I woke up. My left arm was 3 inches, 2-3 inches smaller than it was the day before.
Oof.
So now I got this injury right when they're ready to push me big.
Yeah.
And they were. And I'm shrinking, and I got a sweatshirt on in the locker room. I'm just trying to hide this. And yeah. Remember Arn coming up to me going, I like the old John better, works out. I'm like going, you dumbass, if you only knew. Was an injury instead of me not working. That's how guys can get. Any sport, if you get injured, your career takes an immediate turn.
Yeah, yeah.
For the bad. And I'm like, looking at Arn, God, you're stupid. You know? You should be going, hey, brother, I see your nerve damage.
Yeah.
But I did again. I'm not a big guy anyway, so I notice it. But God, I just always felt that resentment of, you know, I could have with my 22-inch arms and all that, and my body just started shutting off and fused box. I always put up this. Take a sledgehammer to a fuse box, open it up and see what's left working. You know, the living room don't work. The bathroom does work. And that's kind of what your body is when it gets nerve damage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was always hard on me. And I've talked to a lot of guys who've been through the same thing. You know, Brad Reynolds. Brad went through the same thing. His body started going and all that. But if you're fortunate enough where your body hung together and you're a good guy and you knew, you know, Eric, I liked Eric. I mean, I knew Eric was trying. I knew he meant like he was doing his job the best he could. But then the arrogance came in and he starts telling people like Eric, well, this is all, tell them all about John North. You don't know about me. You were too dumb to even see I had an injury. You thought I just quit working out. Sure, you bet. I just quit working out just right before a big push. You bet.
Yeah.
I don't mean, it does sound resentful, but I truly am not. It's just, I call shit the way it is.
Yeah.
And Eric kind of jacked a few guys and that helped him early in his career. Like me and a couple other guys, Wayne Bloom and a few other guys in the AWA helped him, you know?
Yep.
And he forgot, you know? He didn't forget Henning because he was a mark for him.
Yeah.
But he did forget a few guys. And
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Cause...
Hell, I just seen him at the airport about a year ago.
Yeah.
I think it was Thanksgiving Day. And he kind of got scared of me. We were going down the escalator. I said, hey, Bischoff. He turned around. I go, what are you doing, you little weasel? And he got scared.
Yeah. I was going to say, because a lot of you guys from the AWA were there, you know, like you said, Bloom, Enos, and everything else. And he didn't really do anything with you guys. And it's almost like he had a little bit of a bias against you guys from his past or something. I don't know.
Well, he did. He did because he got brainwashed by Hall and Nash. You know, he went into this fog of listening to them guys, you know, and we're like, Eric, you're one of our guys back home. We helped you. And now you're all about these guys and nothing about us. And the only good thing I can say, though, is he did put me on $150 a year and I didn't have to work.
So yeah.
How much can I dislike the guy? I don't. But I call it the way he is. He is kind of a weasel. That's all right.
Yeah. Well,
you know, maybe. Maybe needs a good paintbrush, you know.
yeah. And so, your health though, you're now suffering from ALS. Is that correct?
Yeah. I still got. My body's not doing good. See, I got the ALS is 100% in control. What happened lately was I got an infection in my knee last December. It put me down on the floor. I couldn't even move. I felt like I was paralyzed. And now I'm sitting here in a cast from my toe to my hip still for 9 months. And if they did 5 operations, and if I don't beat it, they want to take my leg. Mm. And that's freaky, serious, sad shit, you know. But
yeah.
A lot of people suffered a lot more than this, and I'm just grateful to still be here and all the guys I know. And is life great? Well, I got the 3 best kids. I'm a little biased. Everybody says that, but I just gotta take care of myself and try to save this leg.
Yeah. What? Yeah. And a lot of people forget, right? When you think of these things, you know, you think the physical stuff. There's a huge mental side, a mental stress to this that goes with having injuries and sicknesses and diseases. That's super impactful. But what's it like for someone like you? I mean, you're a big guy, always been strong. You're an athlete. You know, that's what you're known for. That's what you made a career out of.
How hard
is it, you know, it's got to be super, even more mentally impactful for someone, an athlete, to experience something like that.
It is. It's humbling. Mainly, too, is it really connects you back with God, because all of a sudden now you're thinking, you know, not without any guarantees of being alive tomorrow, mm-hmm. you know, but it does back with the Lord, and you get, that's the good thing out of it, because you realize, man, I wish I could have seen this years ago. All I did was think about the surface things, you know, keggers and friends and wives and wrestling and nothing but you miss the laughs.
Yeah.
The laughs are things you miss. But the reality of it is this life is so short, and you got to know and believe something bigger than yourself, where you came from, why you're here, where you're going. And you just got to, otherwise you're a lost dude, man.
Yeah.
And all you can do is pray for your wife. Because a lot of guys don't have a clue.
Yeah. Well, and like you said earlier, right, the Cauliflower Alley Club has helped you out with the scooter so that you can, you know, can be mobile. But there's, yeah, but there's still a lot of medical expenses, right? Still lots of things, stuff you still got to do. So you obviously have a GoFundMe that's been set up to help you with these things. I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but I want to make people aware of that. If anything they can do to help you out would probably mean the world to you. It does.
Because I'll tell you what, my son's in charge of it, and he's a hard ass, you know. he makes sure any money goes to the medical part of it, or, you know, and I appreciate you so much having me on this show now. I
mean, of course.
Just to bring that up is really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the downsides to being a professional wrestler, right? You're labeled an independent contractor, so there's no retirements, there's no health benefits, there's no insurance, there's none of that to help with these things. And when you're done, you're done, and you never know when you don't know when that day is. Most guys can say I'm gonna work till this 65, but you can't do that, and you don't know, it could end early. It's
exactly.
So it's,
and you know about, and you don't know about injuries.
That's right. So it's,
you know,
it's crazy.
I remember when we were kids out of high school, I ran Jesse Ventura's gym. Mm. Now Ventura played football at a junior college with my brother, and my brother introduced him to his wife.
Okay.
Terry.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll make it short. He goes, hey, Johnny, I can put a move on you and eat an apple with the other hand and still pin you. I said, no way. First of all, I can smoke you right away. So we go in his front yard, and I look up at the picture window where the living room is, and there's Terry watching us.
Yeah.
Wayne Bloom's with me. Ventura puts a leg in and puts his hip on kind of my body, around my head, kind of hard to describe. Almost like a guillotine type thing. And Wayne, and he says, all right, Wayne, when we say go, I go. All of a sudden, 1, 2, 3, go. I just exploded and just picked him up and stuck him to the grass. And I looked up, and there's Terry, and she was like holding her hand over her eyes going, oh, God. But the reason I tell that sounds kind of egotistical. I don't mean it like that, but you got to know how things were back then. And guys, you just don't come up to a guy and tell him he can do something, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't. It was just ridiculous. But listen, Jesse, we all hung out there at the original Ventura's gym. Hegstrand, Rude, not so much Henning. He was already in Portland, and on, Simpson, and I graduated with Scott, and he helped a lot of guys just by having the gym.
Mm-hmm.
So as I get older, the more I appreciate Jesse, and God, all these guys are just, I mean, they're really great dudes, and I enroll a lot of gratitude, and that's no bullshit, you know. And now it's just kind of crazy because this was 2 months ago, the doctor says, hey, this is the last operation, then I got to amputate. I said, what did you just say? You know? Can you imagine a doctor saying that
to
you?
Yeah, I know.
No, and it really freaked me out. I woke up, and the infection's still there. So right now I'm 50-50, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But I still like clowning around.
Yeah.
And I love telling these wrestling stories because when they're true, they just ring true. Like, like me calling Eric a weasel.
Yeah.
That's all. I don't mean it maliciously. It's just, he just was a little weaselly back then.
Yep.
Because he could be, you know.
Yeah.
But get a, the NWO was a phenomenon, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've brought up a couple times guys like Wayne Bluebeam and Mike Enos. Man, I was always a huge fan of theirs. I always thought they were such a great tag team. And
they were really underrated, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Always loved them. Especially, I know they went on to that Beverly Brothers thing in the WWE, but, man, I always liked that Destruction Crew thing when they were in the AWA. I always just thought, man, it just worked for them. They were just such badasses.
They
should
have stayed with the Destruction Crew.
Yep, I agree. But
I agree, and that's a good point you made, because me and Wayne talk every day, and, you know, when we say the same thing you just said.
Yeah. You know?
And they were good, because Wayne had cut and go, I got this, Mike. Stop. You know?
Yeah.
Because Mike wasn't a great interviewer.
Yep.
And Wayne was good, and he could really good, and he could, you know, and just whatever, it just worked, like you said.
Yeah, and I want another couple of PWI rookies of the year. There, one of them was, I think they won it as a tag team. I'm pretty sure
they did win it as a tag team.
Yeah,
they did.
I don't know if
what was it, 89.
I think so. I don't know if that's ever been done by another tag team that I know that I recall. That's a
It's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I always liked them. Like I said, like you mentioned earlier, they're at the end. You know, the AWA was struggling with lots of things, but they were definitely a bright spot there. And
they were good, and they got trained by Brad, so that's why they were good.
Yep.
Because Brad trained them. You just don't show up and be good like that.
Nope.
Unless you were trained by somebody that knew what they were talking about, and Brad knows what he's talking about. If you went to Brad Rankin's camp, you had a stamp of approval with the rest of the country.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Well, he had a run there in the late AWA also there with Camp Patera as tag champs. So he got a
he got
a little bit there.
There's another injury thing.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. You know,
Brad's knee went, and he said, I can't do it. So they never had a match.
Yeah,
so they gave the tag team titles to them guys.
Yep.
And but nothing, you know, Wayne and Mike are, Wayne I've known since I've been 17. I talk to him almost every day. But anyways, it was just too bad that Vern was so bullheaded.
Yeah.
But he was an icon, and whatever the reason, I think it was just too hard to fight that much money with that many people out east. You know? Yeah.
Yep.
Here absolutely. We are in the Midwest, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you got Podunkville, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota.
Yep.
There just ain't enough ammunition to beat the big machine.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what it was there, though, in that Minnesota area, though. Must have been something in the water there for a few years, because the wrestlers you guys were turning out at that time, around Robbinsdale and all that, but they were just coming through like crazy, and they became the biggest names in the business.
And, yeah, and thanks for saying that, because Robbinsdale's near and dear to my heart. We're close to there, and Robbinsdale, it might have been something in the water tower, I don't know. And then you also got the University of Minnesota.
Yep.
We had national champions, Brock Lesnar, a guy named Cole Conrad was just an animal, won the nationals twice. You had Tony Nelson, another animal. Won that nationals twice or three times, and they're all heavyweights. And so my son's the coach for Columbia University.
Oh yeah.
And they always ask him, what was with them heavyweights from Minnesota? Because my son was a heavyweight at Minnesota, but he ended up being behind Tony Nelson and the national champ, so he cut down to 198 and didn't do, you know, I mean, he just, my son was a really good high school wrestler, won state twice, but he wasn't a great Division One wrestler, but he is a hell of a good coach for Columbia.
Yeah.
People love him. He's just likable, and that's a lot. In recruiting, you got to be like that. You got to be likable.
Yep, absolutely. So, well, I know, hey, John, we'll let you go. Maybe we'll do another one some other time and talk a little more about something, you know, dig a little deeper into something else. And
we'll talk because I'll tell you some shit you might have to plug your ears.
No, man, I like hearing that.
Oh, man, but I'll tell you shit you never even could believe.
Yeah, see that.
Made my take and me, the Undertaker. And it just goes on and on, but they are fun stories to tell. And all this stuff, and on your show here, listen, it's all done out of love. You know, we're all in this together.
Yep.
If you can't have a little fun telling these stories, and if you got to tiptoe around shit you say, then I don't want to be on the program. Because
that's right.
You can't call a guy a weasel or say you want to punch this guy's face in and all that, then you're not being honest.
That's right. Yeah, so we'll definitely have you back on then, and we'll tell some of the stories.
Now, listen, what is your podcast name here?
It's called Wrestling Nostalgia. And it's pretty much all history based, talk about the past that, I just talked this morning to Baron von Raschke and interviewed him.
Jimmy Raschke from Nebraska.
That's right. Yep. And then, last week I talked to, Barry Darso, another Minnesota boy.
Oh
there.
My God. Darso,
yep. Yeah. Had him on.
Love Barry was my best friend. We did some shit, drove down to Florida when we were kids and did some stupid shit. But yeah, you've been around, man. I'll tell you, you're a good interviewer.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate that.
Because you're polite and you let the guys ramble on a little bit.
Yep.
It seems like your questions are pretty good, pretty comfortable. You know?
Yeah.
So
well,
I like it.
Yeah, I always say I don't like calling them interviews. I like the conversations, right? I just like to talk to you, get you guys talking, telling stories, and have a good time. And that's what everybody wants to hear. That's what we're here for. And you know, I don't care about rattling off a bunch of dates and this and that and everything else. I just want to hear some stories. And
let's get to the meat that might make us smile.
That's right. Yeah.
And I like it. You had three guys from Minnesota. Good God, that was you had a good day today.
That's right. Yeah.
Good God. I talked to Darso and Raschke.
Yeah.
Those guys are class, wonderful men. A little bit different than me because I'll say some shit about a guy and they don't.
Yeah.
But,
I've talked to several of you Minnesota guys. I've interviewed Greg Gagne. I've Jim Brunzell.
There you go. Good God.
Yeah, a few years ago.
What took you so long on me?
I just working my way down the list.
Yeah. Okay.
A few years ago, right before he passed, I got to interview Larry Henning, one of his last interviews he did.
Yeah.
So and that man, that was an honor. And
love Larry.
Yep.
Love Larry.
Yeah.
You should have seen him in his prime.
Oh, I know it.
He was a mammoth.
I'd give anything to see some footage of him and him and Harley, and
Larry was just so unbelievably he was as big and built as any guy. I mean, and as far as that goes, the strongest guy ever.
Yeah, they didn't call him the Axe for nothing, did they?
Yeah. The Axe is back, and the Axe is back to stay. That's what he always said. I remember Kurt being gone from high school for a year, and I'm like, God, why did you have to move down to Arizona? Well, then they moved back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then Kurt was back, and we were up to our ways again.
Your shenanigans but, again.
yeah. And, you know, Hegstrand went to Henry High School, which is right by Robbinsville.
Yeah.
And one night at Robbinsville McDonald's, we're, you know, acting cool and all that. And Henning punched Hawk through the window of his car and just gave him like a short jab, right?
Yeah.
Hawk went crazy. Him and Norton are driving all over. They think it's me who hit him.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't know Nord from Henning. They don't go to our school.
Yeah.
So they think it's that big Nord kid that, yeah, I know it's him. So they came in school, Norton and Eggstrand, looking for me during regular class hours. And the principal goes, "Don, I'm worried. There's two guys out there that say they want to see you. I don't think they want to see you very nicely." I says, "Come on, bring them to me. I'll see them." I knew what it was about.
Yeah.
But I was ready. I was ready, and the principal kind of just shut the deal down.
Yeah.
Can't. But that's the kind of guys we were.
I can't imagine working in a school back in those days. Like I said, with all those guys around Minnesota. And
oh, God, we ought to have been. We were just mental.
Yeah.
We ought to have been locked up. Did
you ever do a stint as a bouncer like all these other guys? Seemed like they all worked as bouncers one time or another.
Yes, I bounced. Of course I bounced. I bounced at Grandma B's and that infamous bar right on the Mississippi.
Yeah.
It's still there. I think it's called Gabby's. And Al Blake just died. He was a Robinson. He wasn't a Robinson. He was a wrestler for sure.
Yeah.
Huge. And he was a bouncer. And the only thing I didn't like is bouncing is when guys would be beating guys to death. Now you'd go to prison.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You could never hit guys the way we were hitting guys. And I wasn't really. I hit a guy maybe once or twice, but to be doing that with that much power and maliciousness, that was just sick. But we didn't know no better.
Yep.
We were just dumb.
You guys must have got a handbook or something. That this is what you're gonna do. You're gonna if you're from this area, you're gonna raise a little hell.
Damn,
go bounce. Get trained and go to pro wrestling.
Yeah, get trained. We knew one thing: we didn't want to work for a living.
There you go.
We wanted to get to wrestling and have some fun and keep seeing each other. That was a big thing. We wanted to keep seeing each other like we were in high school, but we had money, you know. And that was great.
Well, you couldn't help it. Anywhere you went, you were going to probably find one of you guys. So,
yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know. It still comes back to I still got a lot of great guys from Robbinsville, and I know people get sick of hearing the Robbinsville thing, but I'll tell you something: those were the best guys, best years, and we were dead loyal to each other. I love all of them as long as Nikita don't think he's a Russian still. I'm good with Scotty Simpson. Scott was a great football player too.
Yeah.
Really good. Which is easy to believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, he was really good. But sooner or later, you got to quit talking Russian to your schoolmates.
Yeah.
I got one. I'll end with this.
All right.
One time we were coming up there, and all the guys came to my house for dinner.
Uh-huh.
My wife cooked it. Scott's at the end of the driveway, and he's waving me to come see him. And I says, "What's up, Scotty?" He goes, "John, only Nikita. I talk only Nikita, okay? Good." I'm going, "What? This, what?" And I'm thinking, so they all come in with the wife. And I'm inside my house, and as soon as Scotty walked in the door, I go, "Scotty!" And his head just dropped. Like, oh, my God. I guess that didn't work. But that, to me, is funny as hell.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, if Scott hears me tell these stories, he knows that I I love Scotty, and he was the real deal. And I just, if you can't see it, if you can't tell a guy he's not Russian when he isn't, then you got to get a new job or something.
That's right. That's right. Well, all right, John. Well, hey, thank you, my friend.
God bless you. Buddy.
Yeah, thank you for your time. And like I said, we'll stay in touch, and we'll do this again down the road and chat some more.
Say a prayer for my leg, man.
I will.
It's a serious deal.
It is.
I try not to think about it, but it's just everything. But no, not to feel sorry for myself. I just I appreciate it. I hope anybody who's listening is doing well and in their lives, and that they're happy and blessed in this short life. You know?
Absolutely. Yep. So.
All right, brother.
Yep. All right, John. Well, thank you for your time, we'll talk
You're
again
welcome.
Soon, buddy. All right.
Thank you. Make sure you tell Carol. Thank you.
I will. Yeah.
Carol referred me. You know.
Yeah. That's right.
All right, bro. All right. Man, I love you. Man.
Yeah. Take you care. Too, man.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out, the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen, if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and thank you to John for coming on the show and talking to me. Everybody, if you got a buck or two, go donate to his GoFundMe. John having some health issues, needs a little help, needs a little support from all of us wrestling fans. So if you could donate a few bucks, the link is in the show notes. Please go and do that. Guys, make sure you follow me on X. I'm at the Dave Dynasty. That's the best way to follow me online for all of my announcements, my thoughts, my opinions, my historical posts, my pictures, my newspaper clippings, everything. X is the best way probably, so follow me there. Also, make sure you go check out all the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. The shows are all great listens that shine a light on wrestling history. Lots of great hosts, lots of great topics. They're very, very fun, enjoyable listens. Make sure you look them up on your favorite podcast platforms or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library for lots of great wrestling content that you cannot get anywhere else. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Guys, on next week's episode, I will have guest drill instructor Bob Carter. Now, that may not be a name you're familiar with, but Bob has been around, done lots of things. Worked a lot of territories, really had his most prominence in Continental, but Bob has got some great stories. It was so much fun to chat with him. We talked about Mid-Atlantic, the Savaldis, Stampede, Continental, much, much more. You're going to want to hear this interview, guys, because, again, it may not be a name that you're familiar with, but Bob has some great stories, and this is a great slice of wrestling history to bring to your attention. Thank you to all of you for listening and your support, your followers, your interactions, everything you do to help keep Wrestling Nostalgia rolling. I do appreciate it. Next week, again, Bob Carter coming onto the show. And until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.